We've made it, everybody. After 3 months of waiting, Formula One is all revved up and ready to go for the 2022 season. Hello and welcome back to the Grid Talk podcast, everybody. This is episode number 174, where we'll be previewing the 2022 Bahrain Grand Prix. I'm your host, George Harrison, and joining me today is host of the Monkey Seat podcast, Tom Horrocks.
Hello.
Host of the DNF1 podcast, Adam Burns.
Hi.
And engineering graduate, Owen Medford.
Hello.
So, lads, let's start with the drivers' champions from last year, Red Bull Racing, Tom. They have the fastest time in testing. Last year in Bahrain, I would say they had the fastest car as well. But are they the favourites going into this round? Because there's a few teams, most notably Ferrari, that have kind of joined the fray at the top of Formula One, going off the testing times we've seen over the last week or so.
Well, I think Ferrari have definitely maintained their position as testing champions once again, but they seem to have done that pretty much every year since I've been watching Formula One. Certainly in the turbo hybrid era, they seem to be the team that push forward, barring maybe 2014, and always seem to be every year the Tifosi are saying, yes, well, it's Ferrari's year this year, and it never seems to be, or certainly not in the last decade anyway. So it's definitely been promising for Ferrari, but I do think that Red Bull have really laid down a gauntlet on the last day with what they produced. And there's obviously a lot more to come from other teams, which I'm sure we'll get onto later on. But I think if you're talking about those two teams there, I would say at the moment you've probably got the Red Bull is probably the slight favourite, but the Ferrari has got a car that I think is going to be reliable, steady, and maybe over the course of a season might be more kind of suited to more tracks, whereas a Red Bull maybe more track dependent, a bit more peaky, a bit like the Williams last year, but obviously with a bit more to it than that. So I think, yes, Red Bull definitely for me are the favourites at the moment, and obviously that would then mean Max Verstappen, because we know that despite what he thinks, Perez probably isn't going to get a look in there. But I do think the Ferrari is definitely going to be strong.
Yeah, Ferrari looking very impressive in testing. Red Bull obviously the fastest. Max Verstappen sent in the fastest time of the three-day test on the third day. On the fastest tyres though, some of the cars behind him not on the fastest tyres. We can't read too much into testing times though, Wayne. I mean, it's more about the miles that the teams do. And unsurprisingly, it is Mercedes-Benz who have set the most laps during Bahrain testing, 385 overall, which is something like six race distances. Very impressive from them. How do you see them going into this? Because they themselves have admitted, and Sir Lewis Hamilton as well has admitted, that he doesn't think the Mercedes are the fastest. But then again, they always say this, and they're always there or thereabouts.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain amount of it that you don't know what to believe when it comes to Mercedes. Obviously, like you say, they've said this before. They've looked shaky in pre-season, particularly I think 2019, and you know they've pulled the same tricks all over again. Where the second test, they come along with a heavily revised package, and we wonder where it was hiding from. I think there's a certain amount of me that thinks, yeah, Mercedes did look a little sort of under pressure, but they've done the mileage. They've not had any real reliability issues to speak of. I think they're one of the only teams not to have really had that many issues at all. Not even a spin or anything like that I saw. And it's one of those things where I think Mercedes, they may be they're sort of worried about it now, or you look at the test now and they're not doing so well. And obviously it's not a huge amount of time between this test and the race, obviously at the end of this week. But there's a certain amount of it for me that thinks, you know, as much as they've got the porpoising issues, and you know, eyewitness accounts a couple of weeks ago now, said that they were probably one of the worst affected, and they did have what looked to me like a, you know, reinforced floor and things like that to try and mitigate that. But they are Mercedes AMG Formula One team. You know, they're the people who have won constructors championships eight times on the trot, even, you know, up against people like Red Bull and Ferrari when they brought the fight to them. You know, they know how to win championships, and you can bet yourself that the people in Brackley, they know what they're doing, and they'll probably, you know, sort of prove us wrong for believing what they say right now, where they don't feel like they're on top of the car. And even if it was true, they'll get on top of the car, they'll understand it, and at a certain point in the season, they say they're far from a race win. But I don't think, you know, we can read too much into that, bearing in mind they always seem to be far away from a race win, and at some point they will get one.
Yeah, it's not necessarily just about having the fastest car. It's about using the car as best as possible through strategy, through the drivers and everything. And Mercedes has shown that. I mean, they've won the Constructors' Championship 8 times in a row, which is miles ahead of anybody else. They're going for a 9th this season. Sir Lewis Hamilton, of course, going for his 8th title this season as well. He'll be extremely fired up with how last season ended for him. But speaking of fired up, I mean, I've mentioned them before just now. I mean, I'm interested to get your thoughts on Ferrari, Adam. There's a lot of optimism around them. They've clocked up a lot of miles in testing. They've looked extremely fast at times, for sure, despite potentially sandbagging. And with Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz in the car, could they challenge for the title this season? Is it a genuine possibility?
Well, it's no secret that I'm a big Ferrari fan, George, so I certainly hope so. I've tried not to get too carried away by the hype and the talk from the paddock. But I think one thing we can all agree on, and I think a lot of people in the paddock in F1 can agree on, is that Ferrari do look fast. And the car itself, they've not really had any reliability issues or any issues really whatsoever that required any sort of major works throughout the two tests. They covered the most miles of anybody in both tests put together. And, you know, until the final day, it did seem that Ferrari looked the favourite going into the Bahrain Grand Prix. It looks like Red Bull might have just pipped them to that with Perez and Verstappen both setting some very quick times themselves and obviously doing some good long runs. But, you know, traditionally, people usually chuck in the usual caveats with Ferrari, saying that they tend to run a little bit less fuel than the likes of Mercedes and Red Bull during their test programs. And we can't really account for the power modes that they run. But with this brand new engine that they've been raving on a lot about, and a lot of people seem to think that it's, you know, at the very minimum might have put them in that ballpark with Honda and Mercedes, or Red Bull Mercedes, if you like. It has been rumored that Ferrari have decided to run a bit more fuel than they traditionally do in their testing programs. Whether that's true or not, we'll have to wait and see. They seem to have dealt with the porpoising issue that they had in Catalunya and seem to have, you know, found some sort of a solution with the floor on that one. Whether that will continue in the race and other races, we'll have to wait and see. But right now, if I was a betting man, I'd probably still bet on Red Bull, like Tom mentioned earlier, to win the first race of the season. But Ferrari are definitely in a position where they can mount a challenge this season. And of course, where Mercedes fit into that as well, we'll have to wait and see. But right now, it's looking good for Ferrari at this point in time.
Yeah, especially if you compare it to last year as well. I mean, I remember last year we were previewing the season, we were going over the pre-season testing, and Ferrari were, they didn't seem to really be anywhere, seemed to be consistent but not particularly quick. And we thought, well, if that's the best they can do, they're in trouble. But for once, they seem to be more focused on the data side of things, which is what they've done this year, and it really worked for them last year, obviously getting third in constructors last year. Not quite the level they want, obviously, but this year they could be challenging for race wins going off of that, whether it be the first race or not, we'll have to see. Around a power track, certainly like Bahrain, it does not look slow. That Ferrari power unit looks as fast as all the others. So I don't think they have any trouble there. It's how their aero is, which is very revolutionary with that front nose. I'm very interested to see how it's going to get on Saturday and Sunday this weekend. Now, Tom, we got to go to your team, McLaren, my team as well. I don't know what to really think of McLaren. Obviously, they've had some bad luck in that Daniel Ricciardo was out for the testing in Bahrain. Obviously, he's contracted COVID. Hopefully, he'll be back for the weekend. That's not confirmed yet. I'm actually looking at the lap charts as well for all the teams. And McLaren are bottom. They only did 200 laps throughout Bahrain testing. And I struggle to see a reason why. I don't remember many mechanical failures, but they only had around half the laps of Mercedes, who had the most. So what are your thoughts going into this season of McLaren? Are they quick but not particularly reliable? What's your take on it?
I think the issue with McLaren we've got right now is that they have a very fast car. It's speed-wise, certainly on raw pace at the moment, it seems on a par with the Mercedes, probably just a little bit behind the Ferrari and the Red Bull. But they've got this issue with their brakes, where they just keep overheating, which has limited them to having very short runs because it was just causing overheating and failures. They have a fix for it, from what I've been told anyway, but they couldn't get it to the test. They could only get a makeshift to the test for the second and third day. So that should, all things being equal, should hopefully be fixed by the race, or they certainly believe it will be fixed by the race. So that's problem one you know, hopefully done and dusted. It may well be a compromise, which may affect their braking ability very slightly, but it will at least be a fix that's not going to make them fail to complete the race. Second problem is definitely the problem of Daniel Ricciardo. Even if he is fit, is he going to be 100%? He may feel fit, but is he going to give a negative test? We see, you know, especially with the way things are going at the moment, I know friends that have been fine for a few weeks and keep constantly getting positive tests for COVID. So is he going to be allowed in the car, even if he is fit? And even if he is in the car, it's like, he's had hardly any preseason testing. He's had a day and a half in the car, so it's not ideal at all for Daniel in the season, when he needs to come out on a personal level for him, forgetting about the team. He needs to come out fighting this year from the very first lap, the very first race, and he's already handicapped. Barring a little bit of luck, I can't see him, even if he is in the car, it's going to be a slow start for him now, and it's going to be a bit of an uphill climb for the rest of the season, given that Lando's going to have so much more time in that car. He's going to know that car inside now, and I know he didn't get a lot of laps in, which has been problematic in itself, but equally just the amount of physical time he spent in and around that car compared to Ricciardo, who's been in a hotel room in Bahrain for a week. It's certainly not ideal at all. So, but I do think the signs are good for McLaren. I don't think they're going to be in a position where they can challenge for race wins outright, which is a slight disappointment. I was hoping they would be in that position, but I do think you've got three teams that are going to be either ahead or with them, which means, you know, it's barring circumstances, some clever pit stops, a bit of luck, that's really going to be their only chance at winning race at the moment. But they are part of a big four, I think, at the moment. No one else is with that top four at the moment, which, given it's supposed to be this massive rule shake-up, which is going to really change the order, it's a bit disappointing to see that maybe, you know, the only difference we've got is Red Bull and Mercedes will switch around. It's just a bit of a disappointment for the for where we are, especially given that Red Bull pretty much had the best car last year anyway. They just didn't manage to convert it into a Constructors' Championship. So a bit of a disappointment in that sense, really. But it's still looking great. But say from a McLaren point of view, I think it is looking good. It's looking rosy. But it's just a bit of a false start to the season. But hopefully it'll come good around race two or three.
Yeah, it is not what Ricciardo needed, really. Obviously, last season he struggled a lot for the most part of the season. He needed to get off to a good start. Whether he'll even be in the first race is unknown. Interestingly, I think another thing we mentioned that Oscar Piastri is the guy that will take his place if Ricciardo can't compete. Alpine have loaned him effectively to McLaren if they need to use him, which I think is cool. I think I'd like to see that. He's a guy who should be in a Formula 1 seat, and we may see it this weekend, even if it's only just for one race. So it's positive for him for sure. And we'd love to see Ricciardo, obviously, in the car. You know, he's the guy who needs to be in there the whole season and getting off to a good start. So we'll see how it goes with McLaren. Hope if they solve the reliability issues out, yeah, they could well be up there. But it's a big thing with the race, especially with a driver like Ricciardo who loves to stamp on the brakes and go for overtakes. So we'll see how that goes with them. We've covered the top four, but going off the constructors last season, at least Alpine fifth place, we'll go with them next. And I'm not really sure what to think about them, Owain. I mean, we do know obviously the car will be very striking pink. It'd be like the old Racing Point because it's got the BWT sponsorship all over the car. But aside from that, they're a bit of a mystery for me. I don't really know what to expect from them. They'll be hoping to be closer to the top than what they were before, challenging for podiums. Alonso will certainly be hoping for that. But is that a realistic aim, going off what we've seen in testing?
I find it hard to tell you, honestly, because, they did a similar sort of, you know, Alpine did a similar sort of lap count to Red Bull. Red Bull and more than Williams. And it's kind of, I don't know. I feel like they should be able to, given that they should have had more resources, more sort of wind tunnel time, more CFD time. They've obviously should have a fully fulfilled budget by the big wigs at Renault. You'd think they'd sort of storm it. They're in a perfect position to where bearing in mind where they finished in the championship. The only thing that maybe would be holding them back would be that Renault power unit and the kind of staff that they can have. I don't really know what to make of it. As far as I can tell, they didn't have any sort of, you know, they had the odd reliability issue here and there, particularly when it came to the fire in Barcelona. But at the Bahrain test, as far as I'm aware, it was business as usual. They just didn't seem to get that many laps in. And I think that's kind of where, obviously, you need to get laps into to understand the problems with your car. And they just don't sort of have that many. Obviously, they've got the fourth most of everyone. You know, to put it in perspective, they've only got 60 more than Haas, and Haas only got and Haas got, you know, an hour less running than everyone else, and was setting the fastest times in the coolest part of the day. So I think there's a certain amount of it that's they're in doubt for me. I've not seen anything that's sort of set the world alight times wise. I know we can't read, you know, read too much into it. I mean, they got a 1:32, which is fine. You know, a similar sort of pace to the Ferraris. I guess it just comes down to what sort of fuel loads they're running and what they feel able to do. I think the real question is it's sort of up in the air, but you'd say that given the aces and the cap that they should have, you know, as much as I'm in doubt, I'm sort of holding a sort of, you know, in my back pocket, a bit of hope for them. I think they probably can challenge for stuff, if not immediately, though.
Yeah, they're a difficult team to read for sure. It wouldn't surprise me if they were going particularly low on the fuel, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they're a lot more solid than last year. It's their big aim. They've put a lot of effort into this car, as have all the teams, obviously, but they put a lot of effort into this car. So we'll see how that ends up for them. As we've just gone through the fifth place team in last year's Constructors, I will mention that if you guys give us a 5-star review on iTunes, you get a shout out at the start of the show. And also give us a 5-star review on Spotify as well. We won't give you a shout out for it because you can't leave your name, but we could, you know, we appreciate it, you know, that, and it helps us in the rankings and everything. We've been going great guns. Like I was saying last year, we're going great guns on Spotify. It's been fantastic to watch. So thank you all for your support, honestly. And if you want to support the show some more as well, you can go to our store on F1Chronicle/store and get some t-shirts like the one I'm wearing. You get a glass like the one I've got here. We're going to mug or any of that good stuff on there. So just check it out for that. And we'll move on to AlphaTauri. They were sixth in last year's Constructors. The main takeaway I've seen from AlphaTauri, Adam, was how bad the porpoising was on the car. Pierre Gasly looked like he was getting the ride of his life, bless him, on day one. But they were quick. They did set the fastest time on day one, slid down the order as it went. Now, how do you see them getting on this year? Because they could have got fifth last year. They had a genuinely really fast car. But I think the biggest question mark is more over their second driver.
Yeah, very much so. Absolutely. With the porpoising issues, AlphaTauri seemed to struggle more than most with that one. I certainly hope Pierre Gasly had some good ibuprofen on standby after he came back into the pits on his long runs. But it's an interesting one with AlphaTauri. I don't think I saw anything from them that stood out to me as an eyebrow raiser or say, wow, this car looks really, really fast. It could potentially challenge some of the bigger teams in the same way that it did last season. And you're absolutely right, George. They should have finished fifth in the Constructors' Championship. They had a car that could, on some circuits, not only challenge Ferrari and McLaren, but beat them on their day. They looked like they were really up there, especially in Pierre Gasly's hands. That being said, there wasn't really any major issues for them other than the porpoising issue, which obviously is more of a performance thing than a reliability issue. But obviously in a cost cap area, you want to avoid the damage that porpoising could cause to the floors, potentially, as it did in Catalonia. So they will need to address that. I think AlphaTauri right now, where they stand in the pecking order, they're probably going to be in a position right now where they may have to try and make sure that they capitalize on issues that some of their rivals in the midfield might be having at this point in time and get on the board early with some big points. Because I think over the course of the season, they might be up against it in terms of a development war if other teams have got better cars than them in terms of performance at the start of the season. So we'll have to wait and see. It's going to be very interesting. And of course, what will be key is if Yuki Tsunoda can up his game. And what we saw in testing, he seemed to be quite happy and quite buoyant, reflecting on his experiences last year. He feels he's a better driver than he was last season. I certainly hope for his sake and for AlphaTauri that is the case, because they will be under pressure. But so far, I think they'll be relatively happy, but they'll be looking to try and take the opportunities early, because I think those will be the best ones for them this season compared to their midfield rivals.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. It'd be difficult to see where they are in the pecking order, AlphaTauri. I think they might get caught by the likes of Aston Martin and maybe even Williams. But at the end of the day, for Tsunoda particularly, if he can be closer to Pierre Gasly, that would be good for him. And I think those that have seen Drive to Survive, obviously Drive to Survive has just come out, Series 4. We've binged quite a bit of it, a few of us, and I've seen all of it now. And it gave me a bit of an insight on Yuki Tsunoda and why he struggled so much at first. I do think he's in a lot better place this year. And I hope he can convert that into some better results, but he needs to hit the ground running, because if he doesn't get some good results in the first part of the season, there'll be questions asked, which I think would be a bit unfair on him, but it's Formula One. It's absolutely cutthroat. They don't make exceptions for anybody, really. But yeah, we'll move on to Aston Martin next. Another team like Alpine that are hoping to join that top bunch. In testing, I think they've had some reliability issues, but nothing too major. They've still been up there in the lap charts and the amount of laps they managed to do. Again, Tom, I think it was a solid, if unspectacular test from Bahrain. They're another hard team to read where they are in the performance charts. But where do you see them being this weekend in Bahrain?
It's this midfield is so hard to read, because outside the top four, I could make a case for every single driver and every single team to be either fifth or last. It just seems to be it's just this midfield is a mid to back of the field. I have absolutely no idea where these guys are. You can pretty much guess where the top four are, but beyond that, it's going to be so hard. And you know, Aston Martin are just completely down the middle, and it's like, I don't think they'll be fifth, but I don't think they'll be last, and so it's just kind of somewhere in the middle there. I think it's going to be painfully unspectacular. They're going to be middle of the road average team again, much like last season, and I don't think that's going to be enough for Lawrence Stroll. I think he's going to be a bit annoyed with how things pan out. I really hope they have a better season. I really hope that Sebastian Vettel can show what he can do still from those early years at Ferrari, and show that he's still got that. And Lance Stroll, we've proved that, you know, the amount of time he's been in Formula One now, he can string a result together. If he's in a car that is up the front, then I have no doubt that he can win races if the car is capable of doing that. But it's just they just need to give the guys a car that can do this. And the difficult thing for me is that this team has been perennial overachievers for their entire existence, and to now have this budget, and then this kind of what seems from the outside, I mean, I haven't seen Drive to Survive, I can't say for certain, but the, you know, certainly for what seems from the outside, this dictator type figure that comes in, and if you don't agree with him, then you're out the door, and bringing in different people and bringing his own people, and the whole DNA of that, you know, that team Midland Spyker Jordan Racing Point Force India team, that DNA seems to be gone now, and it's now this big conglomerate, corporate Aston Martin, and they appear to now be the team that pound for pound are probably one of the worst on the grid with the budget they've got, and the what they achieved last year, it was not good at all. So they need to make a step forward. But looking at, you know, evidence wise so far, I mean, if Alpine are looking particularly Alpine and AlphaTauri are looking particularly average, I can't see Aston Martin being better than them, which is just a bit of a disappointment really from an Aston Martin perspective. And I can't see where the improvement's going to come from. And if they can't get it right now, when they've basically not had to design a car for 2 years, when are they going to get it right? And it's a bit worrying, really, to be honest. And I hope I'm wrong, for Vettel's perspective, because I want to see him do well. But I think potentially he could be looking for pastures new next year, potentially replacing a Spanish guy who's going to be feeling a lot of El Pain this year, in my opinion. So it's just so hard to read with Aston Martin. So I hope they do better than they did last year, but it certainly doesn't look like it from my perspective.
El Pain for Alonso. Oh man, well, you never know what might happen. I mean, Alonso's not going to stick around in Alpine if they don't perform. There would be a seat there. Who will fill it? Who knows? I mean, the logical choice, some might say, is Pierre Gasly, but we know that Ocon and Gasly do not get on, so that is an unlikely combination to happen. But Aston Martin are a very difficult one to read. They've gone from when they were the, you know, Force India in Racing Point, they didn't have a manufacturer behind them. They were just that entity. And it was like, yeah, it's great to see them in Formula One. They'll get the odd podium, they'll get solid points. And that for them was like, this is amazing. But now they're Aston Martin, you know, they need to be up there, they need to be getting podiums, they need to be winning. You know, that's kind of what they have to be doing. That's what Lawrence Stroll and the people that Lawrence Stroll works with, you know, that is what they'll be expecting, you know, not hoping for. That's what they're expecting. So how they get on is going to be, it's going to be crucial to the future of that team and the drivers and everything. It's a massive season for Aston Martin, as it is for Alpine as well. And as well, it could be a big season for Williams as well. It's a new start in terms of the regulations. He had a much better season last season. They were in a solid eighth, which is not where Williams want to be. Of course it's not, but it's a lot better than they had been doing in other seasons. However, they've lost George Russell. They've gained Alex Albon, who is a decent driver by most accounts, as is Nicholas Latifi. I mean, how do you see them getting on away in this season? Because testing, they've been all right, not spectacular, but then again, that's what testing's all about in a way.
I can frame this two ways. I remember, you know, back in the sort of early Mercedes, well, yeah, sort of 2017, I think, Mercedes days, one of the sort of marks of their car was their ability, was the fact that you noticed that between Hamilton and Bottas at the time, their times were incredibly similar. And if you take a look at the actual times that Williams have done, you'll notice that Alex Albon is only 0.6 of a second on a one-compound faster tyre than Nicholas Latifi. They've both done about roughly the same amount of laps over the 3 days. And, you know, that could shape up to be sort of, you know, an incredibly promising scenario. As, you know, I've been on about Alpine having you know, the ability, one of the biggest budgets on the grid and all the wind tunnel time that they could deal with. If anything, Williams are also, from this positive perspective at least, in an even better position with, you know, obviously, like you say, being eighth, having the most wind tunnel time, having the largest cost cap, I think, one of the largest cost caps that they have, obviously new investments from Dorilton Capital, Jos Capito coming in, maybe understanding the sport a bit more. Yeah, it's an incredibly positive outlook. And then you see things like Nicholas Latifi stopping on the third day, I think it was the second or third day, with cake tins on fire because, you know, they are on both sides. And that's not a grabbing caliper. That is probably a design issue where something's been catching and rubbing and has combusted. And then you've got obviously the damage that was caused by that. And then the subsequent fire extinguisher efforts. That's the where sort of reality crashes the party, and they've got 258 laps, which is not a lot. It's, you know, it's 2/3 of Mercedes basically, you know, and that's not engine performance. Clearly, that's not that, you know, that's not like they're running a different engine or anything like that. That is like for like, and I think it's the sort of alarm bells because Williams have sort of missed the modern era, as was put by David Coulthard a few years ago. You know, from sort of 20, you know, we haven't seen a competitive Williams since about sort of 2006 onwards, if we're lucky. And it just feels like 16 years down the road, they could potentially have had a slight change to the rules, got on top of it in one sense, and just had a complete misfire. And we could be, you know, waiting years before we see a Williams at the front again, if we do at all. So I'm concerned. Alex Albon, as you say, good driver, spent a year in DTM driving GT3 cars, which in some ways are, you know, are kind of similar in the way you have to drive them to these new Formula One cars, where they're a lot more point and squirt. And Nicholas Latifi knows what he's doing. He's a solid driver. We've, you know, ragged on him a little bit for being unimpressive, but the guy's, you know, decent in a car, won't stick it in the wall. But I'm not sure how much confidence I would place in them right now. I'm not sure that I fully agree with Tom's statement that, you know, the midfield to the back is all sort of one big glob. Based on what I can see, you know, as much as I think they'll get on top of the issues, I don't see a massive amount of sort of positivity here, because if you can't finish races because you've got sort of issues with your brake discs, you know, that can cause obviously massive issues, and they've only got a week to sort it really. Obviously that will go right to the priority, but I think that there's some promise there, but also there's some real pitfalls that Williams could yet fall into.
Williams and McLaren struggling with the brakes around circuit like Bahrain as well, where brakes are extremely important. It's one of the hardest circuits of the year on brakes. Got four massive braking zones, I think, as well. So it's gonna be interesting to see how they get on. I'm hopeful. I'm hoping that they'll be better, but I think the lack of George Russell will hurt them, because obviously that kid's unbelievable. I'm so glad he's in Mercedes, obviously, but Williams will be will be gutted at that. No disrespect to Alex Albon. Like I said, he's a good driver, but he's not on George Russell's levels. Not many drivers are on the grid, in my opinion. But we'll move on to Alfa Romeo next. And I was actually quite surprised to see they're up there in terms of laps. They're fifth in terms of laps at Bahrain, but not that far behind Mercedes, only about 40 laps or so behind them. So in terms of that, it's quite good, Adam. We have seen some problems from the Alfa Romeo. I think Bottas had an oil leak on at the end of one of the morning sessions when they were doing that practice start, which was a bit, I don't know if it's funny or just a bit tragic, really, for the guy. He doesn't seem to get a break in that regard. But yeah, two new drivers at Alfa Romeo. We've seen the car. It looks nice. In terms of performance, though, what can we expect? Because obviously they got a rookie in the car as well in the form of Guanyu Zhou.
Well, they had a difficult first test in Barcelona. They didn't get a lot of laps in. I think it was, they might have done the least, or Haas, one of the two. But this was much smoother for Alfa Romeo. I think if you looked at the mileage, they'll be very, very happy with the performance of their car. As you mentioned, George, they had a few reliability issues with Bottas. I think he had to stop twice with hydraulic issues or something like that. But overall, I think it's fair to say that Alfa Romeo looked like they've got on top of the majority of the issues that they had at Barcelona. In terms of the outright pace, I think there were Bottas's fastest time, I think, was only half a second off of Charles Leclerc. I mean, if you looked at that without any caveats or anything else, I think Alfa Romeo would be delighted to only be half a second slower than the Ferrari going into the Bahrain Grand Prix. Albeit, you know, with Alfa Romeo, they tend to be the team that tends to exaggerate the performance a little bit more than everybody else in terms of how close they run to their true performance. So we kind of have to take that with a pinch of salt and rain on their parade a little bit. I would be surprised if Alfa Romeo turn up to Bahrain at the very back of the field. I think they've certainly got closer to this midfield battle with the cluster of midfield cars that we've seen. Again, where they fit into all that in terms of the outright pecking order, it's hard to say. But I think overall, they've definitely made some progress in this next test. And I think they'll be quite positive going into the first race of the season with what they got.
Yeah, they're an interesting one, Alfa Romeo. Looking at the evidence, you'd say they've definitely improved a lot since Barcelona. The reliability of the car is a lot better. It's just like somebody has to be last. It's a reality. There's 10 teams in the championship. Somebody has to be last. And it's very hard to pick who will be that. Alfa Romeo being one of the favourites. I've heard that some people saying, yeah, they are going to be the worst team. But it's hard to pick at the end of the day. And in Valtteri Bottas as well, they do have a good driver, especially at that kind of level. I know we've obviously you know, given the guy some crap, giving him some insults basically for some of his performances in Mercedes. But in a midfield car like that, like we saw in Matt Williams as well, I think he'd feel a lot more home. It's a new start for him there. I do think he'll get off to a good start there. But we'll see how it goes. So we've mentioned 9 of the 10 teams. Last one is Haas, who I don't know if you've mentioned, but they do have a new old driver in a way. They brought back Kevin Magnussen to replace Nikita Mazepin. Obviously, it's been a very tumultuous, very turbulent, or that's the word I'm looking for, yeah. A very turbulent pre-season for them. They've lost the title sponsor. They've lost one of the drivers. They've replaced one of the drivers now. But how do you see them getting on, Tom? They've had all of 2021 to develop the car. In theory, they should be a lot better than what they were last year, but it's a hard one to read for them. Saying that, though, Mick Schumacher, he did get the second fastest time in testing, which I know obviously you can't read too much into it, but it's got to count for something.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't read into it. You're absolutely right. And given that he set that, obviously, when there was no traffic, the track conditions were at the absolute best they were going to be. The same thing with Kevin Magnussen's quickest time as well. So absolutely can't read into that. But I am actually very excited about Haas this year and what they're going to bring to the table. They, for the first time in a few years, well, certainly since not the same as last year, is they do not have the worst driver lineup on the grid. They have a better lineup than at least one, potentially two teams. I think their lineup is stronger than Williams, for example, my opinion. I just think that they've definitely got more opportunity to come forward this year. The whole team as well seems to be on a much happier place. The toxic influences are now been ejected from the team, obviously in very difficult and depressing circumstances. But the positive to come out of that is that this team is now fresh and away from those toxic influences, and they have a guy back that they never wanted to let go in the first place in Kevin Magnussen. I'm sure if they'd have had their way, they'd have got Grosjean back as well. But I think think he's having too much of a good time in America. I don't think he would have left even if they'd have asked him. But getting Kevin Magnussen back is absolutely brilliant. I never considered it myself as an option. I know he was tied into other contracts, but they were certainly contracts that could have been got out of. And given that they've now got Ferrari personnel, like they have their own area in Maranello that they're working out of, and they have ex-Ferrari personnel that have been deemed surplus to requirement due to the budget cap and everything. They've obviously been moved sideways into Haas, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if there was some conversations between former work colleagues, should we say, without exchange of information. Certainly some philosophy conversation may happen at times. I think it's in Ferrari's best interest for Haas to be competitive if they want to get a good gauge on how Mick Schumacher is as a driver and whether he's a viable option if things go south between Leclerc and Sainz. They need to do that this season, and now being alongside Kevin Magnussen, that is an absolutely fantastic yardstick for them. I don't think they're going to be up there getting podiums for the, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think they are in that clump, and they are in a position where they are going to be getting points. And they are going to be competing for points. And I completely get what you were saying, Owen. You'll have a different opinion about Williams. And I understand that. I just think that they have pace now. But Haas have that pace as well. So Williams may well end up being last. And I don't think Haas are going to be last, which is great. I mean, we didn't expect them to be last in 2020. I know they weren't, but we didn't expect them to be at the back in 2020. And they really, really were. And they were right back there with Williams and then haven't developed from that point on. So with 2 years budget behind them, a fresh start, you know, back to the getting Kevin Magnussen back in, lots of new employees, new regulations set. I think everything's looking great. And Gene Haas seems to be willing to put the money in now, because the Formula One teams, given the popularity, the way it's grown in the last 2 years since they signed up with these deals with Uralkali and Nikita Mazepin, Formula One team value has skyrocketed. The equity involved in Formula One teams now is so much greater because of the budget cap and the fact that it is now a viable business model. And, you know, you look at Red Bull can now afford to pay Max Verstappen £15 million a year, and I'm sure Perez isn't on chump change, and they can still make it a viable business venture even with spending that much money. You know, the sponsorship that they've got in covers their entire, you know, the entire contract of Max Verstappen. Basically, Oracle are paying Max Verstappen's wages, and then the rest of the car is all just profit. So it's Formula One is big business now, and Gene Haas would be a fool to sell it and would be a fool to not put money in, because he's gonna get that money back and then some. It's now a viable business, Formula One, and I can see, you know, I've heard that apparently Andretti have approached Haas at least twice in the past and made an offer for the team, and Gene has told them where to stick it. So it shows that he's committed, which is great, because I want to see 24 cars on the grid. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but it's good to see that Haas are now going to be, they're going to have a purpose. And the same, you know, my favourite team from last year, Alfa Romeo, they've now got a purpose as well. And it's great that we actually have these teams that now are fighting for something. And so Haas, this is the most excited I've been about Haas in a long time. Probably since the Australian Grand Prix when they had the two cars in the points and then they lost them in the pit stops. That's the last time I was that excited about Haas. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing how Haas go this year. So I'm going to go for points in Bahrain for Haas. That's how confident I am for them.
That could be considered a bold prediction. That we'll get into those very soon. But yeah, Haas are interesting. I mean, they've had a cloud over the teams ever since 2019, ever since the whole Rich Energy thing, ever since the whole Mazepin's thing. That is all gone now. That is all in the past, and it's not coming back. And I'm very glad for that as well, because they need it. They need that kind of boost. And having K-Mag in the team, that's great. I mean, they might not get on, who knows, but I really hope that Mick and Kevin really get on. I feel like they'll do quite well. There's a real talent in that. They've got a real, I mean, I think Magnussen is an underrated driver. I do think he's a really good driver on his day. And obviously Mick Schumacher, you know, we know he's talented, especially with his dad is at the end of the day. He's got some serious talent, that kid. So it'd be very interesting to see how they get on. There's some really interesting team battles out there between new teammates. I'm very interested to see them. So we've gone through all 10 teams now. Let's get into our predictions. It's going to be very tough. This is going to be the hardest predictions we've ever done, I think, on the Grid Top podcast. We've never gone through a regulation change while I've been on the air since 2019. So to predict this, it's a very difficult one. It's a very difficult one. But given everything that's happened in testing, I'm gonna go for three different teams on the podium just to mix it up. I'm gonna say Max Verstappen for the win. I feel like Red Bull, I think they're just gonna edge it. I think Sir Lewis Hamilton, I think he'll be up there in second. So if Hamilton Verstappen on the top two again, something's changed, some things stay the same. And I'm gonna go for Charles Leclerc in third. He's very good around Bahrain. He should have won there in 2019. And that Ferrari is a very quick car. Maybe not the quickest, but it's going to be up there. Maybe they'll get pole position as well on Saturday. I'd go for Charles Leclerc for pole position in my predictions. Most poles, sorry, for the season in my predictions for Grid Talk. But we'll see how that plays out. Owen, what is your podium prediction? What's your top three?
Should have brought a hat up here so I could just pull numbers out of it. and then would have been better sorted with that. Honestly, I have no idea. I do agree with Tom. Actually, I was quite sad that I didn't get a chance to talk about Haas because I think they've accidentally locked themselves into the position of the season for where they're at. And I'm gonna go with, I think Mick can probably, if he's lucky, can get onto the bottom step of the podium. Yeah, Bahrain's always a bit of a crazy race at times. We've seen that recently, and I think there might be a little bit. You know, reliability, a few clashes. I'm going to go with Charles Leclerc for second, and I'm back in McLaren. I'm going to go with Lando Norris for the win. I think he's had 200 laps around Bahrain in that car. He's had the most in a car of anyone. He could do well.
Was I meant to
do the bold predictions later?
Yeah, those are all bold predictions. Bar for Charles Leclerc, I mean, even Charles Leclerc second, that's quite bold. Mick Schumacher never scored a point in Formula One, but you're going for him for a podium, 15 all at once. And Lando Norris for his first win in Formula One. You know what? I'd love to see it. That is just an absolute crazy factor that I don't think anybody can predict.
Put that on your acca. That's what I mean.
You would win a lot of money. You'd win a lot of money if it won. But I feel like it's the kind of odds where if you put £5 on, you may lose £5. But we'll see. Adam, try and follow that. What's your top three predictions?
I mean, I don't really think you can follow that up. I thought one was just joking around there. Like, I thought, okay, like at some point he's going to go April Fool, but we're still in the middle of March. But I mean, wow, I certainly hope that podium comes true, Wayne, with Mick Schumacher. I mean, no one's a bigger fan of his than mine. Obviously, you know, connections to his dad, etc. Big fan of his when I was growing up watching F1. I'm going to be boring. I'm going to go for a more likely looking podium, if I may. I'm going to go with Max to get the win. I think the Red Bull do look like they've got the best package, and in Max's hands, it does look like those upgrades are really going to do the trick for him. And then I'm going to go for Ferrari second and third with Leclerc's and Sainz in that race. I think Mercedes might still, you know, I'm sure they'll find some sort of solution to help them. With the porpoising issues that they've had and obviously the sacrifices and performance they've had to make to sort of compensate for that. But I think we may have to wait a few races before we see Mercedes sort of understand their car concept a little bit better. And then when that time comes, obviously then, or you know, it's going to be quite an open championship. But yeah, I'm going to go Max to win, followed by the two Ferraris in second and third.
That play, that could easily happen. Ferrari do look like they've got a very solid car, and we know they have two very solid drivers as well. Tom, what's your podium predictions?
Oh, well, I think Red Bull will have the quickest car, so I think it'll probably be Verstappen on pole. But I just got this feeling that something's going to happen, and it's going to be a big fireworks on the first race, and something's going to happen straight away. It's going to just throw everything up in the air, and I'm going to go for a Charles Leclerc victory. And I don't think Verstappen's going to be on the podium. I think something's going to happen. There's going to be a coming together, or there's going to be some kind of safety car thing that's good, and then everyone's gonna call conspiracy theory this is FIA trying to level the score from last year or whatever. Something's gonna happen which is gonna put Verstappen back in the pack or out of the race. So I'm gonna go for a Charles Leclerc victory from an unlikely third on the grid or something like that. And then It's difficult. I think probably Perez on the podium, maybe third place with, yeah, cheeky Lando Norris in second place. There we go. That's more out of hope than expectation, to be honest. But yeah, it's yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go Leclerc, Lando, Perez.
It could easily happen. This is the beauty of the regulation changes. None of us really know what's going to happen. Obviously, we've got the fastest times. We've got all these lap charts, but we don't know what they were running. We have no race data from these guys at the end of the day. So it's going to be fascinating to see what happens. Bold prediction time. I mean, I'm struggling with this one. My old go-to was, of course, to go for George Russell for the points. That is no longer a bold prediction. That is an absolute... That's not a certainty, but that is what you absolutely expect to happen. So, I mean, I kind of alluded to it before. I don't think it's that bold of a prediction, but I'll say Charles Leclerc for pole position. He did it a few times last year. The Ferrari's looking pretty damn good. How it is over one lap, you know, remains to be seen. But yeah, I'm going to go for Charles Leclerc for pole position. Not to win the race. I think he'll fall back. I think Ferrari don't quite have the ultimate race pace, but who knows? They might do. They might well do. Wayne, I feel like you've gone for a few bold predictions. You can go for another one if you like, but don't feel any pressure, mate.
I did just look up what the odds on that podium finishes, and William Hill won't tell me.
They're not offering odds. It's that unlikely. They're just like, you can't have that, mate.
Other betting services are available. Please gamble responsibly. But I'm going to go with...
Stop.
I'm going to go with an... Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go with an Aston Martin for the win. That's my bold prediction. I don't care who it is. Just an Aston Martin will get the win.
Can't be doing this. We can't be edging bets already. This, like I said on Red Lights podcast,
This is what happens when you cram up an F1 fan for 2 months. This is like, just all this stuff comes out.
They start seeing things. They start seeing Hasses on podiums and all sorts. It all goes crazy. You know, they start imagining things. Actually, what's your bold prediction?
Well, I mean, you know, forget Drive to Survive. I want to watch an F1 season scripted by Wine. I mean, those predictions are brilliant, mate. Honestly, I want to see more of that. Bold prediction. I'm just going to get it in there. Mick Schumacher scores points for Haas in Bahrain. I think that's a reasonable one. I think
that's more than reasonable. It's fairly bold given the past of Haas and the past of Schumacher. He's never scored any points, but not for lack of trying. So I'd love to see that. That's a very feel good moment. That I think it's definitely possible as well. Tom, what's yours? What's your bold prediction?
Well, that was actually going to be my exact bold position there prediction there for Adam. But
sorry, Tom, I had to get it in there.
All right, well, I'll go one step further and double points finish for Haas. There we go.
Ooh, I like it.
It's been a long time.
I was considering saying Alonso slowest on pace, but I didn't want to trigger the entire country with Spain.
You've already done it with El Pain.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah, I don't. There's certain countries we do not get many downloads from, and I'm pretty sure Spain is one of them. I wonder why.
I just want to point out both of those predictions line up with mine, so it's all good. It's all going to go well.
Yeah, loosely they do. Yeah.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. If like Adam said, if it races anything like Wayne predicts, we are in for an absolute treat to kick off 2022 Formula One season. So those are our predictions. Those are our bold predictions. I'll give you guys a chance to plug your outlets as well. Wayne, let's start with you. Where can people find more from you?
If you like something a bit more, somehow a bit more serious than that, make sure to check out my meme reviews. There's obviously all the ones from last season, apart from the races that were a bit too far in on the West for me to do reasonably. And they're back for this year. I'll commit to that. They're going to be even crazier. The writing's going to be worse, and you can read all about them on sportlightpro.com.
Yep, definitely check that out. Adam, I've mentioned that you are the host of the DNF1 podcast. What is that and where can people find it?
Similar to Grid Talk, DNF1 podcast, we talk all the talking points in Formula One. We review and preview the races. And you can find us on the DNF1 YouTube channel. Just type in DNF1, you'll find us. We've got our Bahrain preview coming out tomorrow, which, of course, similar to this episode, we'll be talking about testing. And we've got a pretty exciting guest on that episode. So if you want to find out who that is, you'll have to tune in and check it out. That's going live tomorrow.
Sounds good. Yeah, I've been on that podcast. It's a great show. And another great show as well is the Monkey Seat podcast, which Tom hosts as well.
Yeah, yeah, you can catch me and Carl on the Monkey Seat. We're just a bit more casual, laid back version of what you guys are doing here, and we just sit back and have a laugh about Formula One, basically, and don't take ourselves too seriously. And also doing stuff for Grid Talk, doing the fireside chat series as well. We also have an exciting guest on Wednesday coming up, which I don't know if I'm allowed to say who it is. I'll just say it anyway. You can always cut it out in post and the live audience and get it as a scoop. We've got Richard Reddy from Mist Apex on Wednesday, which is really cool, and that was a really fun chat. So yeah, go tune into that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to mention about that as well. We do have the Fireside series going. Tom usually hosts that. I've hosted one as well. We interview guys that are interested basically about Formula One. And also we will have another Fireside as well. I don't know if it'll be a Fireside or a regular episode, but it'll be our 2022 season predictions. That'll be coming out. That'll be coming out on Thursday. I actually have down that it'll be that episode that you mentioned, Tom, will be out tomorrow. So by the time this goes on the outlets and stuff, it will probably be out pretty soon after that. So yeah, busy schedule for sure. And we'll be back on Saturday as well to do qualifying. We're doing the same format as last season. We'll be doing reactions to the events about an hour or so after they actually conclude. So for the race, for qualifying, we'll be there on Saturday at 5 p.m. The race a little bit later on Sunday, I believe it'll be. We'll get all the details to you guys as well. And if you want to check us out on our outlets as well, obviously we do live stream these episodes on YouTube. Normally, just go to F1 Grid Talk on YouTube, you'll be able to find us. We also are available on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, Verbal, Omni Studio, Pocket Cast, and the F1 Chronicle website. Just search for F1 Grid Talk and all those. We can check out our back catalogue of over 170 episodes. We're going to hit 200 comfortably this year. We've got a lot planned for this year. It's going to be a big year for us. Hopefully a big year for Formula One as well. And yeah, we'll see if Steve's very soon. Thank you, lads, for joining us. I really do appreciate it, as always.
No worries.
No problem. Thanks for having
us. Yeah, and we will see you on Saturday for the regular show coming back. We'll be reviewing Bahrain qualifying. Will we have a better idea of where the cars will be by then? Probably, but it's going to be an exciting race for sure on Sunday for Bahrain. So yeah, see you for the next one. Goodbye.